Madam Clerk.
Jim Sykes.
Here.
Matthew Beck.
Here.
Ronald Arvin.
Here.
Steve Culligan may be calling in. Dan Mayfield. Barbara Doty.
Here.
Vern Halter. Well, I'm expecting him anytime, Mr. Mayor. He is in the building. You do have a quorum.
Okay. Is there any comments on the agenda? Is there any objection? Hearing none, we will let them stand as presented. Let's rise and, I'd like the oldest man in the room to lead us in the pledge, Mr. Cottle.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Okay, this is our spot on the agenda for audience participation. List is coming up. Thank you. And we have Kathy Hummel followed by Eugene.
Hi, my name's Kathy Hummel. I live out in the Butte, and I was looking over these strategic initiatives. I don't know that 3 minutes is enough time to cover it. But you got a big task in front of you. I looked through some of your codes and would encourage you at this time to perhaps ask for some more records so we know exactly what our emergency personnel do with all this money we give them. It's very unclear what amount of funding goes to fire protection and rescue and hazmat and ambulance driving. When I read through the powers and duties and the established medical services codes, I saw where rescue got somehow stuck in with ambulance drivers, and that's not typical. That is typically something you might see under a more tactical operation like fire. The other thing I notice is fire service is defined as fire protection. I don't know if that makes a difference if you're inside or outside the Corps. I live outside the Corps. But because our Butte Fire Department seems to have these escalating costs and we keep losing our people and we don't have anybody on that fire service advisory board, I decided I would submit an application for that, and I hope that you will take that under consideration before doing too much with these initiatives if we're not getting a lot of feedback from the people you're supposed to get that information from. So hopefully if we have one, we can start finding out where all this time and money goes for such a tiny community as ours. Thank you.
Thank you. And by the way, I haven't seen your application yet. Oh, well, yeah, you don't have to be that timely, but I've been looking for it. Thank you. Eugene.
My name is Eugene Carl Haberman. I represent myself. I follow the public process. If the public process done appropriately, the decision made by the governing body is more like in the public interest. First, I'd like to compliment the setting here. I appreciate very much the way you arrange the arrangements of having a timer like that. As you know, I attend a lot of meetings, both in Anchorage and here, to have the clock as visible and large for the public to see the time, to show that what is really the time. It's not someone like in Anchorage, the way that you don't know what the time, amount of time left and so forth, and that's most respectful, and I appreciate that very much. Also, the setting here for the microphones, both for accessibility of the handicap and wheelchair access, for that level and here is quite appropriate. These two elements, you get a 4A rating by me compared to the other bodies. When I go to even the cities that are more compliant with the open meetings law, these two aspects here, you are more in compliance than them with the way the settings are, and thank you very much. Last thing I'd like to note is I couldn't help but notice a few days ago, there's a notice of a meeting in this room, either the 9th or the 8th, says AKLNG, referenced Stoltz. Thank you, Borough Manager John Moosey, for the phone number contact, because I had trouble getting a hold of Stoltz. And I guess it's a quarterly update that they're doing, and they're scheduling it here. I'm glad they're holding in this room, because I think this room is one of the better settings for having public meetings in the region, not the Menard Center. And I hope that this room would be more number one choice than in any of the other rooms out there. But I am concerned, unfortunately, that they are in conflict with a City of Palmer deal in which they're engaged with the hiring of a city manager. And I did mention that to them today. But thank you very much.
Thank you. Is there anybody else that wishes to speak to us? Please come forward.
My name is Patricia Rosnell, and I didn't see these handouts at the website beforehand. I'm sorry, I didn't get a chance to review them. But my understanding is that this meeting is about emergency services operations, and I see very little information about operations presented in these handouts. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else? Seeing none, we will close audience participation and move to our presentation on emergency services. Mr. Manager, do you want to tell us if this is on operations or strategic initiatives?
On operations, and I believe it's centered around his strategic initiatives, which is coming to the assembly, so I think that's appropriate. Bill Gamble is going, our director is going to be coming forward, but I'd kind of like to let you know the busy weekend we had. We had a 30-acre wildfire at Mile 91 this weekend. Kinnick Glacier Rescue, we had a four-wheeler roll over in the river, hypothermia. We had a vehicle in the Mat-Su River, and recovery of the vehicle and the person. Baldy Mountain, we rescued three people. Submerged in a large mud hole and rescued our six-wheeler and a four-wheeler up the mountain. Commercial structure fire. And then, of course, we had the Miller's Reach area, the wildfire. And we were really sweating that one. It approximately 55 acres, wind, dry conditions. This really had the potential of being even worse than the Sockeye fire. So I'd like to say this is a once-in-a-lifetime event, but these once-in-a-lifetime events seem to happen about every third month here. So with that, I think we were really fortunate this week, and I think that had to do with the organization working together with the forestry department. And fortunately and unfortunately, we're getting very good at handling these things with the practice that we're getting. Mr. Director.
Let's note for the record first that our Assemblymember Halter arrived at 4:03. Welcome. Okay. That had to be done for the clerk. Okay, Mr. Gamble.
Thank you. Bill Gamble, Director of Emergency Services, Matanuska-Susitna Borough. Through the Mayor to the Assembly. Good afternoon. Thank you for the opportunity to share with you what I believe are the five most critical strategic initiatives that the Department of Emergency Services needs to accomplish during the next 18 to 36 months to achieve increased operational efficiency, improved cost effectiveness, and to continue to improve the quality of service we provide to the residents and visitors of the Mat-Su Borough. Before I begin my main presentation, I'd like to give you a brief update on the leadership rebuilding process that's taken place over the last 3 months at DES. My management philosophy is pretty basic. To be able to manage an operational organization, you need to lead by example and have credibility with those you intend to lead. I have filled the top DES management positions with individuals that not only have strong backgrounds in leadership and supervision, but are also highly skilled and experienced emergency responders. All of them have spent time as on-call employees with the Mat-Su Borough, so they have a keen understanding of our system and its challenges. Because of this, they bring tremendous credibility and respect with them to their positions and with our employee workforce. My managers are fully licensed, certified, and current in their specialties. When not working on administrative assignments, they will spend time in the field supporting daily operations. By being fully engaged, both administratively and operationally, DES leadership should be able to better understand and stay on top of issues that are important to our employees. When I was offered the director position, I was told that accountability needed to be a top priority, and I believe my team has been successful in getting that message out. But I also want my responders to know that their physical, mental, and emotional welfare is my highest priority, especially in a calling that can wear hard on a person. It's not for the weak or faint of heart. I want my employees to come to work healthy and happy, knowing that they're valued and our greatest asset. But also, there is an expectation of exceptional performance and dedication to duty. And in return, I will do everything I can to support them. Now I'd like to introduce my management team. To my left, Deputy Director of Fire, Ken Barkley. To my right, Deputy Director of EMS, Lisa Behrens. In the back, my emergency manager, Casey Cook. Next to him is the Chief of EMS Operations, Glenn Stevens. And not here tonight is the newest addition to the management team. Scott Williamson is the Deputy Chief of EMS Operations. I'm not sure Rebecca's here tonight. I was hoping that the dispatch supervisor from Palmer Police was going to be here. Doesn't look like she is. But our IT director, Eric White, is here, who will assist if necessary and should be able to help answer any questions about dispatching communications or the 911 system that may come up. Our mission, the Department of Emergency Services' primary mission is to protect life and property. We accomplish this through fire, EMS, and rescue services provided to the citizens and visitors of the Mat-Su Borough. Included in that is water rescue, as well as some limited hazmat and off-road rescue capabilities. In addition to our daily operations, we have an emergency management division, a fleet maintenance division, a fire code division, and the admin support staff. Next, with the PowerPoint presentation, I'd like to just take you through a quick overview of DES leadership and the administrative structure. So I have the Department of Emergency Services as the director, and emergency manager Casey Cook, deputy director Ken Barkley, deputy director Lisa Behrens work directly for me. Under the fire division for deputy director Ken Barkley, he has all of the fire chiefs assigned to him. And under Deputy Director Lisa Behrens, she has the EMS Operations Chief and Deputy Chief and the EMS Division under her. Also working directly for me, Ken and Lisa, is the Admin and Support Staff. A Quality Assurance Manager for EMS, Sherry Turner, and my Administrative Assistants, Casey Laughlin, Rena Dodson, Stephanie Vitt, and Sherry Lambs. The Fire Division underneath Deputy Director Ken Barkley. We have the Butte stations, Central Mat-Su stations, the Sutton station, Talkeetna stations, West Lake stations, Caswell Lake stations, and Willow and Talkeetna. Excuse me. Also under Fire Division, which was brought up here earlier, rescue is administered by the Fire Division and Deputy Director Ken Barkley, as well as the hazmat services. Most of the rescue services, as far as vehicle and other type of rescues, are performed by the fire departments, with the exception of the water rescue team, which is under Chief Gary Klink, and the hazmat team, which is under Chief Randy Newcomb. The Emergency Medical Services Division, underneath Deputy Director Behrens, we have Sutton EMS, Butte EMS, the Lake Louise First Responder Crew, Willow EMS, Talkeetna EMS, Trapper Creek EMS, and our largest EMS is Core EMS, which is Palmer, Wasilla, and Lakes. The next division is Fleet Maintenance. We have four mechanics. Three of them are fire. One is dedicated exclusively to West Lakes, Mr. Bill Henderson. And then maintenance three, Cody Graham, is our EMS ambulance mechanic. Station 5-1, the newest addition to our fire stations is the code office. In the fire code office, we have Don Cuthbert, Rich Boothby, and Jake Boothby. EMS training staff, Bill Mackworth, Gloria Strickler, and Mandy Grinnell. And support staff, Michelle Wagner, Becky Lang, and Kim Gallardo. All right, some statistics for you. During 2014, we responded to 12,633 calls for help, 9,884 EMS calls, 1,683 fire calls, and 1,066 rescue calls. In the last 7 years, we've seen a 50% increase in our call volume in EMS, and that is a truly significant number there. Prior to December 2012, we had 550 or more on-call emergency responders employed by Mat-Su Borough DES. In January 2013, we were limited to 29.9 hours per week. And as of July 2015, we have 437 DES on-call responders with less than 50% that are actively responding. So this is the situation for us. We're declining in numbers for on-call responders. We're continuously getting letters like this of resignation, if we get a letter at all. A lot of times, people just disappear. They used to be able to earn enough when we were working 1,820 hours a year that they could respond with us, but now they're having to seek employment elsewhere, so we're losing our on-call responders. So we need a plan. Over the last 3 months, I've spent a lot of time examining the condition and needs of the Department of Emergency Services. Much of what I found confirmed what I already know. The DES initiatives presented today will address both current and future issues. They will help prepare DES for the future increases in demand for services that we know are inevitable. These are initiatives that we can begin as soon as we get approval to move forward, and most of them can be completed within the next 12 to 24 months. They specifically target increased workforce efficiency and improved cost effectiveness, as well as quality of service. All of these initiatives should have been planned for and implemented incrementally over the last decade. Unfortunately, this is not the case. They are still relatively easy fixes, but three will require funding beyond what is available in our annual operating and capital budgets. Identifying the top five strategic initiatives was not difficult. As previously stated, each one is critical to the short and long-term success of DES. So before I start the main presentation, you should have a copy of the initiatives. Please stop me if you'd like for me to go back over something, or if you need to write something down, or if you have a question for us. What I'd like to do is give a quick intro to each initiative, and then go through the slide presentation of objective goals, problems, and solutions, and then take questions on each initiative as we finish, if that's acceptable. Mr. Mayor, will that work?
That's okay. Fine. Do you want to see if there's any questions up to this point? I've got, you showed several slides that included all the fire stations and the EMS stations that are not in our packet. I wonder, just so that we can have a complete record, one PowerPoint presentation.
Oh, Mr. Mayor. Yeah. If I could note, there's a lot of animations in this presentation. They won't print.
Well, I'm talking about what he already covered.
Yeah, they wouldn't print because they're animations on the same page.
Okay. Well, just so you know, we heard what you said, but we didn't see it all.
Okay. When we printed them out, they all printed. I'm not sure why they didn't. I know the assistant manager, Mr. Hayes, told me that they didn't print out for him either. They did for us, but I can get you copies of the full presentation.
I would appreciate that because this is a pretty comprehensive report.
Is this the same
one? Yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay. Do you have a second one that you want
to complete? I didn't see a second one.
Okay. We'll make sure.
Oh, here it is.
Okay.
But that's not what he's covered so far.
Okay.
Thank you.
And this is, we should have used this one.
Okay, go ahead.
All right. Any questions so far? None? Okay. So we use the SMART principle whenever we're developing.
Mr. Mayor?
Oh, who's online?
This is Steve Culligan. I just wanted to check in.
Oh, good. Well, note for the record.
Been on since 10 after.
Okay. Assemblymember Culligan's been on since 4:10. Okay.
Okay. So in developing initiatives, we use the SMART technique for developing our initiatives. They're specific and simple, easily understood. They're measurable. They're achievable. They're realistic. And they're timely. So the first initiative that I'd like to talk about today is DES Consolidated Services. The first initiative, also known as fire-based EMS, FLSA labor law allows fire department personnel to work 106 hours and 14 days or 53 hours per week before accruing overtime. Non-fire EMS responders must be paid overtime for any hours over 40 in a 7-day work week. During fiscal year 2015, DES paid more than $535,000 in EMS overtime. And although we will never be able to completely eliminate overtime, we can drastically reduce it. Consolidated emergency services is being used all over the United States by career and combination fire departments to achieve a more efficient and cost-effective workforce. This is accomplished through cross-training EMS personnel as firefighters and firefighters as EMTs and paramedics. Our responders become more efficient because they now have multiple skill sets and can function in more than one role during an emergency response. The system becomes more cost-effective because we can now take advantage of FLSA labor law that allows full-time employees to work 53 hours per week before we have to start paying overtime. To accomplish this, area-wide EMS and rescue need to contract with the fire departments to provide EMS and rescue services. Area-wide will pay the fire service areas to provide the services based on a percentage of EMS calls and rescue calls that occur within each fire service area and will be reviewed regularly. Calls outside the fire service areas will be assigned to the fire departments based on who can best service that area. Providing EMS and rescue service outside the designated boundaries of the FSA, I believe, can be accomplished through MOUs or LOAs. Consolidated emergency service is not an all or nothing. We can begin implementation in the core area, starting with the Central Mat-Su Fire Department, to get any problematic issues worked out. Then the program will naturally expand into the other fire service areas when it is warranted. So our objective is to improve workforce effectiveness and efficiency. Our goals are to reduce scheduled and unscheduled overtime and associated costs. Have more effective resource utilization. Enhance coverage for 911 calls. Problem, $535,000 in overtime was paid during fiscal year 2015. And we're not able to utilize the 56-hour work week model for EMS personnel. The solution is the consolidation of fire, rescue, and EMS service with cross-trained personnel, which would qualify for the 56-hour work week scheduling. So now I'd like to entertain any questions about that initiative.
Assemblymember Sykes.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Through the mayor to Director Gamble. I believe we talked about this a little bit in the past, but how is it that the 56 hours are derived as permissible without paying overtime?
Well, we'd have to pay 3 hours of overtime. 53 hours are permissible before you have to pay overtime, but to make the schedule work, which are called Kelly schedules, which is used by like Anchorage Fire Department and a lot of career fire departments, you actually have to work 56 hours to make it all the schedule work out.
So how do you even get to 53 when most of the other state overtime laws kick in at 40?
There is a federal FLSA law that allows, and maybe the attorney can speak to it.
Yeah, you need to talk into the mic.
Thank you.
and it is exclusive to fire personnel, but fire personnel that are performing EMS duties also are included in that FLSA Act, but just pure EMS responders are not. That's why it's important to consolidate EMS and rescue into the fire service so we can take advantage of that labor law.
So the question I had earlier when we discussed that, I assume there's a bright line between fire and emergency. If you're cross-trained, obviously you're going to be billing either or, because one is area wide and one is non-area wide. They're being charged to a very different funding source. So is that something that's going to be possible to handle on paper?
Yes, it is. Currently, we contract with the City of Palmer to provide fire and rescue services to Greater Palmer. And so the principle would be the same. The fire service areas would contract with area-wide to provide EMS and rescue services in the fire service area and then outside of the fire service area through an MOU or LOA. That would be something that I'd have to work out with the attorney.
Assemblymember Mayfield, is your finger on the trigger? You need to talk into your mic more. Actually, Madam Clerk, I think all the mics could maybe come up a little bit.
I can't even hear myself.
Right. So there's several different models out there. And the one that's being used in Anchorage right now, they respond with paramedic engines, and then they have an ambulance that follows the engines to a call. The paramedic will get off the engine, assess the patient, determine if that level of care needs to be provided, and if it does, then the paramedic gets off the engine and rides with the ambulance to the hospital. If it's just a basic life support call that doesn't require a paramedic, then an EMT firefighter will get off the engine and get in the ambulance and provide basic life support to the hospital. We're taking fire, EMS, and rescue resources, and we're combining it to have a better, more efficient workforce that can do more. And in all actuality, we're doing it right now. The mayor alluded to it earlier. The fire departments are responding to medical calls when the ambulances are all out on other calls. We're filling the gap as it is, and this is just taking that to the next step that we need to go. Where the fire departments are actually managing the EMS, fire, and rescue resources instead of just filling the gaps as it would be. And we will be able to take advantage of the federal labor laws at the same time. I would think so. I can't guarantee anything. I'm not going to go out and say it definitely will. But as the service becomes more efficient, that would be the natural thing that we would respond quicker because we'd be using full-time employees more than on-call employees.
I'm not expecting
I would agree that there is a higher potential for responders to get to scenes more quickly. Over the last several years, there has not been an emphasis on the fire department's training as EMS responders for whatever reason, and that needs to change. We need to train our firefighters to provide medical services, and we need to train our medical providers that want to provide fire and rescue services.
Okay, go ahead.
Whoa.
Yeah. It's Mr. Mayfield's mic. It's not the one that's not working too good. So go ahead.
I've got one more question. Just
Mr. Halter.
On a consolidation fire rescue and EMS, you said you would just, of course, we know the fire are funded out of the service areas. And then EMS and rescue is funded where right now?
Out of area wide.
Out of area wide. And how would you remedy that situation if you're consolidating it? You said some sort of contractual arrangement?
That's correct. And we've already started a mapping project. So we would map where the EMS calls and rescue calls are taking place. And we'd look at those numbers, and then we'd see how much money is in the area-wide budget for EMS and rescue. And then it would be divided among the fire service areas, depending on what the call volume is in those areas.
And it would be managed by the fire service areas?
That is correct.
And it would be, so the board of supervisors of each fire service area would be actively involved at EMS also?
The board of supervisors would be actively involved, and I'd like to say that actually it would be managed by myself and my deputy directors of fire and EMS.
With supervision from?
The fire departments would be providing direct oversight of EMS, that is correct.
Right now, can you legally put an ambulance in like a satellite fire service area building? Say a new fire service area, satellite, not a main. Can you put an ambulance inside of one of those right now?
Yes.
You can?
Yes. And area-wide pays rent to the fire departments for that space.
But you'd have to have some sort of leasehold to do it?
That's correct.
You can't do it without a leasehold right now?
We could. If the fire department wants to give space away to area-wide for an ambulance, they can do what they want. But if you're taking advantage of a fire service area's facilities, then you should be reciprocating for that.
So, okay, thank you.
Okay.
Initiative number two. The second initiative is ambulance operations and revenue stream. We have two opportunities during the next 12 to 18 months to significantly improve the amount of revenue that EMS generates, while at the same time strengthening our ability to service the transport needs of Mat-Su Regional Medical Center and our daily EMS emergency response capabilities. Additionally, these initiatives combined with consolidated services initiative will have a significant impact on our ability to meet current demands for service through improved full-time staffing levels without a need for increased funding. During fiscal year 2015, it is estimated the EMS department will generate over $6,300,000 in billable revenue. However, it's estimated that only $3,300,000 will be collected, only 52% of what is billed. That will leave approximately $3 million uncollected. This is partially caused by the need for a full-time accounting assistant to help Tiffany Robinson, our EMS accounting specialist, primarily to do follow-up work on EMS reporting. Tiffany does have a 1,000-hour employee to help, but like most part-time employees, once we get them trained, they find full-time employment elsewhere, and we have to start all over with someone new. Additionally, the implementation of the EPCR program will provide more accurate information to the billing department and will increase our billing percentages, but only increasing accounting staff will increase our collection percentages. The second part of this initiative is partnering with the Mat-Su Regional Medical Center to staff a full-time transport ambulance. Currently, we are using an operational ambulance to do transports for Mat-Su Regional Medical Center. Depending on how busy we are, it may take several hours for EMS to get freed up to take a transport. Or an ambulance is on a transport call and we get busy, which can delay our ability to respond to 911 calls in a timely manner. What we would like to do is contract with Mat-Su Regional Medical Center to provide them with a staffed dedicated ambulance 24/7. We would provide the medics, ambulance equipment, and supplies. The contract would be enough to cover salary and benefits. EMS would continue to collect the revenue from the transports, which should increase with a more reliable and consistent transport service. For daily operations, this would free us from tying up an ambulance and medics on transports, especially during busy periods of time when we need every ambulance available for 911 calls. So our objective is to improve EMS efficiency and more effectively utilize area-wide funds. Our goals: electronic patient care reporting to improve documentation accuracy and improve ambulance billing percentages. We need to increase ambulance billing department staffing to improve ambulance revenue collections. And we need to enter into a contractual agreement with Mat-Su Regional Medical Center to improve EMS revenue stream and enhance public safety coverage. So now I'd like to answer questions or have a discussion on this initiative.
Assemblymember Doty and then Assemblymember Arvin.
I'm sorry, I forgot another part of the slide.
So
the problem is millions of dollars in outstanding or delayed lost ambulance revenue. Public safety needs are outpacing 911 system capacity. Mat-Su Regional Medical Center needs are competing with public safety needs. And the solution is complete the EPCR project ASAP, increase staffing in ambulance billing department, contract with Mat-Su Regional Medical Center for dedicated transport ambulance.
Dr. Doty.
Through the mayor, Mr. Gamble, thank you for this report, and I think they are pretty crucial issues. Can you give me some information about the number of transports that go out of Mat-Su Regional and whether they're land or helicopter based, and how that would change that perhaps if you had a dedicated ambulance in the bay there?
Yes. Deputy Director Behrens will speak to that.
Right. Through the mayor to the assembly. Regarding the number of transports, I have spent a lot of time with Tiffany in our ambulance billing department looking at figures and statistics over the past several years. Roughly 2007 is the earliest WebCAD information that we have. Back at that point, our transports from Mat-Su Regional were in the dozens. I believe the number was around 47. It has increased steadily since then into the hundreds, and last year we were closing in on 1,000 per year. Most of those are coming out as either non-emergent or critical code red transports by ground. There's the occasional patient that needs to go by helicopter, but the vast majority of what's coming out of Mat-Su Regional are ground transports.
Just in follow-up, just for clarification too, any newborn transports typically come out and go back in from Anchorage because of the specialty equipment they have to have. Just for a piece of information. The other question I had was, that's the total number regardless of whether they went by helicopter or by land?
Those are just the ground transports that we were calculating there.
So my question was really actually added on, what percent of them are helicopter transports currently?
I would have to go and get some additional information on that, and I'm more than happy to write down questions and then prepare a report back for anything that we can't answer here.
Mr. Deputy Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm not sure how to precisely ask this question, but I think it's typical in any organization, whether it's public or private, that the billings and the revenue in is pretty crucial to the success of the operation, right? And so how does your department interact with Mrs. Clayton's department, or is the billings that you do to insurance and private individuals that don't have insurance for the ambulance ride that they're paying for, how does that actually get accomplished? I mean, can you walk me through that just real quick?
Yes. Again, through the mayor to the assembly. In the past, I'm sorry to say that our interactions from the EMS side with the billing department were relatively minimal. The way that we usually connect is that a transport is accomplished, an EMT or a paramedic writes a paper patient care report. Those are collected in a secure location. They are gathered up and dropped off at the DSJ building in the ambulance billing department. And for an awfully long time, that was all the communication that there was.
Interrupt you right there for a second.
Certainly.
So, Mr. Mayor. So the forms are filled out, kept in a secure location, and then they're brought to this building?
Correct.
to the finance department for the actual billing to occur?
Correct.
Okay.
And I think one of the things that led to this gap between our billables and our collectibles were a lack of communication between us and our ambulance billing department, a lack of understanding of how the quality of information we were providing was affecting the ability to bill and to collect. And approximately April of this year, a better stream of communication started occurring between our ambulance billing department. We identified training needs. We're educating our responders to provide more quality documentation. The EPCR project is going forward, and my intention as the director of this division is to have a much closer relationship and understanding with that aspect of things, because I believe that we can do better in reducing the net cost of EMS by paying attention to our ambulance billing and participating in that process more than we had in the past.
Okay, and just one quick follow-up. So how many individuals are in EMS that are tasked with billing for ambulance services?
Speaking for the ambulance billing department, we have two full-time people in that department and two part-time people in that department. And I have some information prepared here that showed us some very interesting trends that were directly related to the number of persons in the billing department and the amount that they could collect. If you would like to each have a copy, I believe Director Gamble made enough copies. Shall I bring these to pass around?
Sure, just give it to the clerk and she'll.
And then I guess my final question along the same line, and then I think I'll be done for a while anyway. So you're proposing to improve efficiency and improve the ambulance billing percentages by increasing ambulance billing department staffing. Does that need to happen, or do you think you can achieve your goal by better interaction with the finance department?
My understanding from looking at the numbers and from communicating with our ambulance billing department is that there is a direct relationship between the number of people who are doing the billing and the amount of reports that they can process and bill and then follow through to collection. Right now, our billing department is very much overtasked and overwhelmed with work. Right now, they are at least 2 months behind on billing. So our department is scrambling as fast as they can, and they are roughly into the month of May, and we're at the beginning of September here. And as with so many things, insurance payments are time sensitive. So if we have lost 2 to 3 months already before the billing can even be produced, then our odds of collection are reduced also. As I was going through and looking at the reports that Tiffany provided to me, I noticed a very interesting thing. If you'll look under the blue header there, the ambulance revenue detail. So the top line of figures are is the amount of billed ambulance revenue. There are X number of patient care reports that come in a year, and it looks like the average is about 65% of those result in a billing. A certain number of our patient encounters, there's no transport, or we find no patient, or for one reason or another, there's no billing to be produced. So about 65% of patient calls for response result in a bill. The second line there, collected ambulance revenue, shows the amount that was collected out of what was billed. And for the first several years there, you can see it was 75% in 2007, 67%. We ran along in the high 60s to mid 70s. And then as our volume increased and the billings increased, the percentage of the revenue that they were able to collect started to decrease. With two people in that office, about $2 million a year is how it ran along. And then I noticed that in FY 2013, it suddenly jumped up by $800,000. And I asked Tiffany, what happened there? She said, that's when we hired our on-call person. So it appears to me that a $30,000 or $40,000 investment in an employee resulted in an $800,000 increase in the amount of those billables that they were able to collect. The other number, if you look at the bottom there, looking at our outstanding uncollected revenues through the years. So from 2007 to 2010, 2011, we were leaving from, you know, $700,000 to $1.2 million on the table, as it were. And then as the volume increased, the billings increased, but we still have the same amount of people to manage those collections, you can see we're leaving a bigger and bigger and bigger number on the table each year. And so from my observations and the numbers and my conversations with Ms. Robinson in that department, this was the conclusion that we came to do something about this. Thank you.
Assemblymember Doty.
Thank you, through the mayor. I equate billing for healthcare services to be driving your sports car in a rainstorm with potholes on a gravel road. It's very hard, and it's gotten much harder in the last 3 years. And so I think even if you had increased your staff, you would still be behind. That being said, obviously there's some delays in the time factor with this critical piece, and I applaud you for trying to address that. Can you tell me what the industry standard is for percent uncollectibles? Do you have an idea of what that is and where we sit compared to the industry standard?
I'm having trouble finding an apples-to-apples comparison there. That is a question that we've been asking, and I do need to do some more studying on. I have heard numbers in the 50% range are acceptable, but I am wondering if that is 50% collectibles compared to the total number of transports and patient encounters versus what's collected compared to billings. So I need to do some more study on that, but from what I see here, that we have some room to improve.
Okay, well, glad to see it's not still up at 75%. Assemblymember Halter.
So on the collectibles versus bill, so who is not paying? It's 50%. Who's not paying?
What we are ending up leaving behind are the things that we haven't had time to process. So we end up expiring on the amount of time that you have to collect on a private insurance claim. A significant number of our Medicare and Medicaid billings had come back to us. That speaks to the education that we needed to have and the communication we needed between our ambulance billing department and ourselves. We had a Medicare audit. They determined that we were experiencing a 76% error rate, and three-fourths of our Medicare billings were being kicked back to us because we needed to learn. As Dr. Doty said, it's getting more and more and more complicated to do these things. So our ambulance billing department had learning to do. Our training staff had learning to do. We're educating our responders, and we are doing our best to remedy that.
Assemblymember Sykes.
Just to clarify what the mayor just said, I read the chart as being 75% of the revenue being collected in FY 2007 and only 52 in the present year. So our percentage of collectibles has gone down significantly.
Correct.
But the total amount has gone up.
Correct. And we would like to see our percentage go up. That's a good thing.
Assemblymember Arvin.
Thank you. Is this billing requirement or exercise that your department has, have you found examples in kind of cross-referencing what other municipalities or other local governments do? Have you found that they outsource that service for better efficiency? Do they outsource it at all? And is that something that you're thinking about doing, given its technical nature?
We have heard that that is an option that that agencies go to for accomplishing their billing. My understanding is that we are somewhat of a rarity in having that in-house. That's one of the next things that I would need to look into is how we are cost-wise as far as, you know, is there an advantage to us to be able to do it in-house? That's something that I haven't even scratched the surface of yet.
Okay, I guess that's it.
Those were the easy ones. Okay. Initiative number three is the radio and alerting system improvements. We currently have a 1970s era radio and communications and alerting system. There have been some minor improvements over time, but overall we are two decades behind where we should be with modernizing our equipment and building out more communication towers to improve transmission and reception coverage. We do not have the capability to multicast, which has resulted in the following problem in multiple areas of the borough. When more than one emergency is taking place, the responders cannot hear each other speaking, and they are transmitting over each other, making it extremely difficult to communicate with the dispatcher. The dispatcher must ask for information to be repeated or must give instructions multiple times. It is extremely frustrating for the responders and the dispatchers. We have only one primary radio channel for the dispatchers to work emergencies. As the number of incidents occurring at the same time increase, the primary channel can get overwhelmed with radio traffic. With only one primary channel, the dispatchers are not able to move emergencies to other primary frequencies and to other dispatchers to reduce radio traffic and workload. Tactical channels work well for scene management, but cannot be used to talk directly to the dispatchers and cannot be monitored or recorded at the dispatch facility. Our radio system is unsecure, and with very little effort or cost, it can be rendered unusable or barely usable. We have to begin the process of upgrading and building out our radio network. We can build a standalone radio system and maintain it ourselves, or possibly partner with the municipality of Anchorage and share equipment and resources. ALMR is a possible solution, but it has the same breaks in coverage that we have with our legacy system, and the state of Alaska has been indicating that they may want to charge a user fee per radio. This could be cost prohibitive for us should that happen, and we might find ourselves back in a situation where we need to build out our own radio system anyway. Additionally, we need to hire a full-time radio technician. DES has over 800 mobile and portable radios assigned to fire, EMS, and rescue. Not having consistent access to someone during normal business hours or for after hours for call-outs has been problematic. So our objective is to modernize current radio and alerting system. The goals: increase radio coverage area and eliminate current breaks in coverage, improve capacity and reliability, decrease call-outs for maintenance, provide radio system security. We have an outdated system with inconsistent coverage. The solution is to modernize and grow our system by installing additional communication towers and updating communications equipment, and anticipate future system needs. Partner, share resources, perhaps with the municipality of Anchorage, and develop secondary radio alerting system. Questions?
So I thought 2, maybe even 3 years ago, we were changing, we were doing all this. Are we doing it again, or did we never get done?
Mr. Mayor, we have made some minor improvements in our radio system, but we still have problems. For instance, if we have a call in the Sutton area and a call going on in the core area, or perhaps a call in the Talkeetna area and the core area, the communications towers are separated. So if somebody is talking on the radio in Talkeetna, they can't hear in the core area that something is going on, and so they're talking over each other. So we need to upgrade our radio system so if somebody in Talkeetna is talking, we hear it everywhere. That's one thing. It's called multicasting. The other solution is we need to have more than one primary channel. So if we have multiple emergencies going on, then the dispatcher can hand off one emergency to another dispatcher to work it to decrease the radio traffic and the workload of the one dispatcher. currently one dispatcher is getting all of the communications, and she's talking to another dispatcher trying to give her information during an emergency. It's just overwhelming with as busy as we're getting right now for one dispatcher to have one channel.
Assemblymember Sykes.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Through the mayor to Director Gamble. So is it the fact that we're not multicasting, that we're unable to monitor multiple, to record multiple instances?
No, the dispatcher can record that primary channel in Talkeetna. It's the same frequency in Talkeetna and Sutton, I believe. Maybe the IT director, Mr. Wyatt, can answer this better than I can. So on that primary channel, she can monitor and record that. The problem is that she's trying to handle multiple calls at one time on that same channel, and so it's just garbled radio traffic that's happening.
But at least we're now carrying one radio in the truck that covers every. It seemed like before we had two systems that had to be carried in order to do the job. And did we finish consolidating it so that a fire truck can get by with a single piece of communication equipment, or did we solve that?
We have not. We actually carry ALMR radios and legacy radios in our vehicles. The ALMR system is our backup should the primary system go down, but we have to carry multiple radios in the vehicles. We have to carry multiple radios. For instance, on the large commercial fire last Friday, I had a radio around my neck just to monitor what was going on with the dispatcher, and I had a second radio that I had to use to talk on the tactical channels to the folks that were working on the fire ground. And then I had my pager, so I was trying to listen to other emergencies that were going on around the borough at the same time. It's not just overwhelming for the dispatcher. It's actually overwhelming for us that are out there providing command structure, too, on the large incidents.
We're either overwhelmed or we don't have any questions.
Okay.
Assemblymember Mayfield. We've got a problem with that end of the string. There's all three of them. Jim's is
so
working.
So in what way would we partner with Anchorage in solving this problem?
I'll let the IT director answer that. It's complicated for me.
Want this one here?
Yeah, that'd be great. Thanks.
Hi, Eric Wyatt, the IT director of the Matsu Borough, and through the mayor to the assembly. To answer a couple of these questions, if I may, Mr. Mayor, yes, we have been spending money on upgrading, but it's been a little bit every year. So there have been some upgrades to some of the systems, but we're far from complete on that particular project. As far as answering the question to partner with Anchorage, the way that we need to upgrade most effectively is to go to a trunked radio system, and that will increase our capability from having the single radio frequency that Mr. Gamble talked about to having five frequencies that could be dual-moded, which gives us 10 different channels that we can talk on. And this is the current technology that is being used by systems like ALMR. Okay. If we were to partner with the state with ALMR, I believe Mr. Gamble talked about the difficulties with that, we may still be cut out of our ALMR system. It may be cost prohibitive. By partnering with Anchorage, we can use the same type of technology, which is the ALMR type trunked radio system, but we would be on a separate network. And with ALMR, right now there are three zones. We are currently in zone one if we were to partner with ALMR directly. Anchorage municipality has develop their own radio system that is completely LMR compatible, and they call themselves Zone 4. So they have complete control over that. They can't be cut out, and their price, their costs will be known and consistent. If we partner with them, what we would be able to do is expand their network greatly into our area, and they would have the base station and the technicians that would keep the radio system up and running. Okay, so that would mean that we could build our own system without actually building the base and the administrative portion of that. So we would save considerable costs by partnering with them instead of completely building our own. The other option would be to completely build our own and become like a LMR Zone 5, but there again, the cost would go up pretty considerably, not only to build the system initially, but to, then to keep it up because we'd have to hire additional people. So the option of building out a trunked system gives us the extra channels, gives us the LMR compatibility, gives us the coverage that we need, gives us the ability to speak between Talkeetna and Sutton, as we talked about. It gives us all of those capabilities. In fact, we can speak statewide if we like. And we also reduce our overhead administrative costs. Yeah. All right.
Yeah. Assemblymember Arvin.
Is the system that you're referring to in Anchorage the one that they started working on at $14 million and now it's like $50 million?
I don't know what Anchorage spent on installing that particular system. I know that there's another, is this the system that is currently going on and currently having problems with? I believe that's the SAP system. And that's a database type of a system that they're using for administration. So that's completely separate from what you've heard in the news here recently.
Assemblymember Halter.
So if we gave you the go-ahead, just magically, how much would it cost and how long would it take to do everything, to modernize?
The estimate that we've got to partner with Anchorage and to really have the best system that is comparable to Anchorage's is about $4.2 million. Time-wise, I would imagine that would take 2 to 3 years to implement fully. We could increase our capability in the short term in some areas within a year, but it would probably be 2 or 3 years before we get it completed.
But that would include new towers and all that?
It would include some additional towers, some additional base station equipment. And as far as the modernization, Mr. Mayor, that you were asking about earlier, last year and then again this year, we'll be spending more money on some of this base radio equipment that is compatible with that. So with the limited funding that we have had, we are working toward that. But at the current pace, it'll take quite a while to complete years.
Mr. Mayor?
Assemblymember Culligan, I've been hoping you would chime in.
Sorry, and I apologize I can't be there today, but this is a fairly large capital investment and long-term investment for the borough. ALMR is, in my mind, a disaster, and it's ungodly expensive, and there are other alternatives, and technology's changing. This is something that's worthy of us having an independent contractor help us out, navigate or come up with some proposals and help navigate through this. It's a lot of times vendors have helped themselves and tried to guide stuff, but it's a very essential system that we need, and I think we need to look into the future and kind of plan that out. But I would support us finding some help and actually discussing this more, having some help in doing that and coming up with some actual numbers and plans and what the alternatives are, if there's a way for us to team up with others to do that, then all the better, as we also look at consolidated dispatch and how it might affect that.
Thank you. I guess that's it. Carry on.
Thank you.
So you say these are the easy ones?
No.
Okay.
First two.
They get harder as they go.
They do. Because the first two don't cost, the last three do. Initiative number four is fleet maintenance facility and program improvements. Our lease expires and we are required to vacate the current DES fleet maintenance facility in downtown Wasilla by the end of 2017. The effort to build a consolidated maintenance facility with the school district and public works has not materialized. Our DES fleet mechanics have more than tripled the ratio of vehicles per mechanic of what is recommended. This does not include the smaller equipment or specialty equipment they are also required to maintain and repair. The mechanics spend approximately 30% of their time completing paperwork and making computer entries, 30% of their time traveling and ferrying vehicles to vendors for maintenance or repairs, which leaves approximately 40% of their time for actually working on vehicles and equipment. They are completely overwhelmed by the daily work orders they receive for emergency repairs. The last number I was given is that the mechanics are approximately 60 work orders behind. We have to purchase or build a maintenance facility that will adequately meet our current and future needs. We need to hire a full-time administrative assistant to enter work orders, complete data entries, place orders, and help mechanics research maintenance issues. We need a minimum of three additional full-time mechanics to bring the vehicle per mechanic ratio more in line with acceptable standards. And ideally, each fire service area should employ its own mechanic. So the objective is to establish a maintenance program that addresses current and future needs. The goal is a facility suitable for DES fleet needs, sufficient full-time staff, adequate part-time and support staff, and move from reactive to proactive stance regarding vehicle maintenance and replacement schedules. The problem is we have an inadequate facility with an expiring lease, understaffed department, very little preventative maintenance, most work is contracted out. Solution is to purchase or construct a facility of sufficient size, increase full-time and support staffing to meet national industry averages, develop preventative maintenance and replacement programs. Questions?
Assemblymember Doty.
Through the mayor, thank you. Could you please clarify for me why it's a problem that things are contracted out?
I would have to think it's the cost. I mean, when we're paying shop time of $110 or $120 an hour for vehicle maintenance, when we should be able to do that maintenance ourselves, I would think that it would be more cost effective.
And has that study been done? I'm looking at the cost, including the building replacement. I'm just curious because sometimes outsourcing and things is appropriate, sometimes not.
Correct.
You mentioned something related to mechanics spending time driving from one place to another. That's not a very efficient use of staffing. Just curious.
Correct. Did you want to answer that?
Through the mayor, Assemblymember Doty. So with fleet maintenance, what are outsourcing repairs out, sometimes we're paying a lot more than if we're doing it in-house, plus we're getting a better service. What's happening so far with a lot of the dealerships we're dealing with now, we go in recently, since I've been dealing with this, we've been taking vehicles in for warranty work. And while they're in there, they tell us, yes, it's warranty, but they get in there, and the average cost additional per vehicle is $3,500. That seems to be the number every time we go in that they charge us additional. They find something else. And because of that, we're spending more mechanics time taking the vehicle back and forth. And then we actually have to take it to a private mechanic, another industry that's available to us here. And the recent ambulance that I'm referring to, after almost a month of back and forth, found out that the problem was just a few $100s versus that we were up to, I believe, $7,000 that they were charging us for this ambulance. So sometimes certain repairs they're not cost effective. And then we contract for oil changes. We've been doing that, contract for oil changes. And then we take them in for an oil change, and then they come back with a list of repairs additional that are needed. Sometimes they do. So it's hard for us to check and balance when we can do it in-house. And then travel time, our mechanics have to either travel to Talkeetna, Sutton, or the Butte to do the repairs. We don't have a facility that we can put the equipment in and do the work. So a lot of things they have to go to the fire stations and do it. So if we had a facility, they could cut down travel time with our mechanics.
Dr. Doty.
Yeah, just in follow-up, so do you have a mechanics vehicle that you transport with that has all the equipment and resources that you need for that? And also, I still don't understand why a mechanic would be doing driving when someone with a CDL could do that safely.
So our mechanics are certified to drive the equipment. So we don't have any other way of getting it there. What we used to do is have the firefighters. You know, we had some that would stand around the stations were available, but then that cuts into their 29.9 hours. So the time that they're driving the vehicle to the shop, then we have to take two because we got to have somebody take them there and take them back. So we're it's costing the hours at that point. We're cutting into our 29.9 hours.
But yes, we do have maintenance and mechanic vehicles that are stocked with tools and equipment.
Each mechanic has their own equipped truck.
Assemblymember Mayfield.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. It occurs to me that, you know, as I went through the emergency services CIP list, that we kind of have an opportunity to do some consolidation of services. And I'm looking at Station 7-3 particularly in that it's centrally located between Meadow Lakes, Big Lake, Willow, and Wasilla, really. And I know that there are plans to eventually expand that station. I believe 21,000 square feet, I think, is what I remember reading. It would seem like if we put a little more money into that project, but a lot less than what we're looking at for EOC upgrade and a fleet maintenance facility and an admin buildings, that we could save a lot of money by simply expanding that facility a little bit more. Can you comment on that?
Yes, Assemblymember Mayfield, through the mayor, I have spoken with both the Wasilla Lakes Fire Service Area Board and their chief and the West Lakes Fire Service Area Board about possibly adding bays on the fire stations that are to be built in the next 2 to 5 years to see if they would be interested in adding bays for fleet maintenance. And the West Lakes Board of Supervisors said that they would be willing to entertain that. The Central Mat-Su Fire Department, I don't want to speak for Chief Steele completely, but I believe that they're reluctant to do that with the Station 6-2 out on KGB because it's targeted as a South Central training facility, and they want to stick to that plan. They don't want to add anything more to that facility.
Assemblymember Sykes.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Through the mayor to Director Gamble, I just saw the Wasilla mayor walk in, and he gave me a tour of a place that was commercially available. It was doing vehicle maintenance outside of Wasilla that had drive-through facilities. I just wonder, had you looked into that at all, and would that help alleviate some of the transfer out of the existing shop in Wasilla?
Are you referring to the transmission shop?
Yeah, the one on the top of the hill.
Yes, we have looked hard at the transmission shop, and it would meet our needs for a while, but we would have to put a couple $100,000 into it to make improvements, and then the cost of purchasing the facility itself, I can't speak to what that cost is going to be. That's in land management's office right now. But yes, we have looked at that facility, and that is a possibility. I think it'll meet our short-term needs, but I don't think it will meet our long-term needs.
Assemblymember Collins.
Mr. Mayor. Yeah, so in this discussion, again, there's several different separate items. One is the maintenance of the vehicle and staff. One is the facility that you're soon to be exited out of because Wasilla wants to take that back for downtown space. And the other is wanting to build a monument to maintenance at the tune of $15, $16, $20 million long-term when we are in a capital budget crunch. and need to do something. I'm glad Mr. Sykes brought up that other facility. There's been several opportunities for, might not be ideal or perfect, but they're possible and will work for the next 10 plus years, but in the next several years, and when that facility in Wasilla is no longer available, might be a good alternative. But there's a couple different competing items here for discussion. The building is in one that has a looming deadline, and I think there's other alternatives, and I'd like to know what those are. The other discussion about consolidation has purely been, since money's been fat the last 5+ years, there's been no incentive for the borough or the school district to really work together. There's been lip service, but there's been no financial incentive, and I think in the next several years that will be a different discussion, and I'd like to hear about it.
Assemblymember Halter.
You mentioned short term on that building. What's your definition of short term?
Probably 10 years.
10 years.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Number 5.
The last strategic initiative for DES is to build, purchase, or lease a facility to permanently relocate or co-locate DES Admin and the EOC. Currently, DES Admin and the EOC are located in 2 separate Central Mat-Su fire stations. Central Mat-Su agreed initially to this as a temporary arrangement until a permanent location could be acquired. That was over 20 years ago when DES Admin moved into the Cottonwood Public Safety Building, Station 6-5, and over 10 years ago that the EOC was located in Station 6-1 on Lucille Street. No lease or rental fees have ever been paid. DES shares routine operating expenses only for Station 6-5 and pays nothing at all for locating the EOC at Station 6-1. Central Mat-Su Board of Supervisors and the Fire Chief have been asking for more than 5 years that DES find another location for Admin and the EOC. The Mayor of Wasilla has suggested that should the Mat-Su Borough give the old Iditarod Elementary School to the City of Wasilla to use as a public safety building, they would let DES Admin and the EOC move into the WPD building and share it with MATCOM Dispatch. Our only financial cost would be for renovations and O&M expenses. Short term, the location will work, but the cost of renovation could be significant, and this arrangement may be politically challenging in the future. For long term planning, the best solution for DES is to design and build new admin offices and EOC. And we should partner with either the West Lakes Fire Service Area or the Central Mat-Su Fire Service Area to co-locate in one of the soon-to-be-built fire stations. So our objective is to secure a facility with co-located DES administration resources and EOC. The goal is to purchase or construct a facility of sufficient size and functionality to meet current and future needs of DES administration and EOC. Maintain the EOC in a constant standby configuration for expedited deployment. The problem is the EOC is kept in a cold configuration at a location separate from DES Admin. Central Mat-Su Fire Department asking DES Admin to vacate current location due to rent-free use of Station 6-5 for 25 plus years, lack of contributions to building upkeep. Solution is to move DES Admin and EOC to a common location with adequate space to meet current and future needs.
Assemblymember Sykes.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Director Gamble, how much space do you think you need for a combined EOC and admin?
I'm not sure. I'd have to get with Public Works, and I'm not sure what the requirements of an EOC are, so we'd have to look into what that is. The admin space would not be that much, but the EOC could be.
Assemblymember Halter.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. What was the, you said something about the City of Wasilla had made an offer on an exchange, land or building. I didn't quite understand that.
Well, I don't think it was really an exchange offer. It was if the City of Wasilla took possession of the Iditarod Elementary School,
if they got to DeGroote Elementary School.
Right. Then the police department would move out of the WPD building and they would move into Iditarod Elementary School. It'd be set up as a public safety building, is my understanding. And they would offer us that space that was vacated for DES admin and an EOC.
At the current police department?
At the current police
department. So it would be a land exchange plus a fair market value building exchange?
I think they would just let us occupy it. I don't think that they would let us buy it.
That would be
for the mayor to answer.
And we're just going to let them occupy Iditarod?
Say again?
The Iditarod Elementary, would that be the same arrangement?
I have no idea.
Okay.
That's what the assembly's for. Assembly Member Culligan.
Yes, sir. Quick question regarding EOC. Did we not get $500,000 or something from the legislature a year or so ago to look at the EOC requirements, et cetera? Or maybe somebody can comment on that or how that comes into play.
To Assembly Member Culligan, through the mayor, I'm going to have the emergency manager, Casey Cook, answer that question for you.
Manager wants a word in here.
Yeah, we will give a report. It was $300,000, and we did a study. We will get you an updated report to that, and we were looking at partnerships with the state of Alaska and their ability to do it. We were looking at different sites. So we're not prepared to give you the exact answer right now, but we will have that for the next meeting. The full update of that grant and where we are and what we learned from that.
Okay, so is there a number six?
No, sir.
Any further questions? Assemblymember Mayfield.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. It's more of a request or directive. I'd like some cost estimates also on, you know, what it would take to, considering the design of Station 7-3 as it stands, or as it's anticipated. I'd like to know what cost it would be in addition to the $8 million, I think, to build that station. What would the additional cost be to add on a permanent EOC facility, a permanent admin location, and fleet maintenance for the entire fire department onto that facility? I know that you've got plenty of land. It's just a matter of cost. And along with that, I'd like to know whether or not that's eligible for financing under COP. So if you could let me know that, I'd appreciate it. Thank you.
Go ahead.
Okay.
I'm sorry about that. I just heard that the only pumpkin in the fair got dropped.
Okay. If there's no other questions, I just have a quick summary.
Should we take a break, Mr. Mayor?
Okay. In summary today, I understand we're in times of economic uncertainty and possibly declining revenues going forward. And we're looking for all possible ways to become more efficient and reduce costs wherever we can. But the reality is the Matsu Borough is growing and all the numbers point that out. We're struggling to keep up with current demands for services, let alone what we are projecting for the future. The bottom line, to borrow a phrase, the can has been kicked down the road for so long that there's not much road left to kick it. Thank you for your attention today and listening to my initiatives.
Assemblymember Doty.
Thank you. Just a question for Mr. Gamble. Could you give me an idea? I mean, obviously, this is a big ask financially, and we're in a time of tight budget. Can you give me I know you've prioritized. You said the first two don't cost money. Is that correct?
Right.
Okay. So of the last three, if you had $100 and you had to spend it on all three, how would you diversify that? In other words, would you put it all in one bucket? Would you split it? How would you deal with it?
Well, that is a tough question. I would have to split it between fleet maintenance and the radio system. Fleet maintenance, I can't emphasize enough how critical we are right now with our vehicle maintenance. And the mechanics are just completely overwhelmed. And the radio system is at a point right now where there's times that the dispatchers and the responders can't do their job because the communications are just overwhelming.
And in follow-up, in the fleet maintenance, it sounds like there's both staffing and physical structure needs.
That's correct.
You have $100. Where are you going to put it between those two?
I'm going to go through the mayor, Assemblymember Doty. I think I would have to put it toward the getting another mechanic or go toward the maintenance side of it because they're just overwhelmed. And a little bit to answer that question is the national average, they call them MRUs, maintenance and repair units, is how fleet services are gauged between how many mechanics, two vehicles. And they break it down. They actually have one for cars, trucks, buses, emergency vehicles, fire trucks, etc. So right now, the national average is 30 fire apparatus per mechanic. We're averaging 50 per mechanic. And that's not including snow machines, trailers, four-wheelers, augers, chainsaw. I mean, they work on all that as well, so it's not including that. And I think what you were hitting on earlier was when I first took the section over, I could not believe how much travel time. We have our mechanics traveling all over, and then we also have them doing, they're on the computers to where they need to be on the vehicles repairing them. And I think that might be where you're alluding to, and that would be my 1,000-hour worker, or they call them mechanic helpers, and those would be the ones transporting the vehicles to them.
Just, and that was part of my question. Now you have $100 for your manpower. Are you going to spend it all on a mechanic, or are you going to split it between the two?
I'd have to spend it on the mechanic because his safety is number one, and I can't get a facility for the other $50.
So. Oh, you have mechanic versus mechanic helpers and other options to optimize that mechanic.
I'd like to have a mechanic and then either 1,000-hour and a helper. If I could do that with the $100, that's how I would do that.
Okay. Thank you. Might need a stretcher to get us out of here. Time for comments. We'll make it voluntary. Assemblymember Sykes.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'd like to thank Director Gamble and the Deputy Directors very much for this presentation. And I feel like we finally got a real good and honest reality check. It's going to be a difficult time to get it done, but I'm looking for your suggestions on how we might also do that. If you've got some good fundraising ideas, we're open to it. And I really appreciate the presentation. Thanks.
Assemblymember Mayfield.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I just wanted to give a shout out to all the firefighters and EMS personnel. You folks have indeed had a busy, busy summer. Just within the last few weeks has been atrocious for you, I know. The folks in Big Lake certainly appreciate your efforts over this last weekend. I know there's been a couple of incidences out there as well as up in Mile 91. You guys are working very, very hard, and what you've been doing in the field just really shows us the importance of your operation. And so that's why I really take to heart the fact that we need to support you prudently and as best we can to accomplish your mission. So again, make sure that you as leaders pass down the assembly's thanks for all the fine work that they're doing and their dedication and hard work. So, thank you.
Assemblymember Halter.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Yeah, I drove down Miller's Reach Road early this morning, and I picked up the new Segment 5 railroad, went down into the area where the fire was. I was totally amazed. We're probably lucky that Segment 5 was built. That made a natural fire burn. And then I think we should I guess, thank Quality along with our great staff and the Division of Forestry for not, that was a tough wind last night. It was blowing 30, 35 at Willow. And I don't know what it was like there, but I assume it was just as bad. So we really got lucky, and that's a great job. Same one up at Sheep Creek. That was off the road system, tough to get to. I guess you had to use the railroad and other assets to get there. So this is a superb job both times. Thank you.
Anybody else? Assemblymember Doty.
Yes, I also want to express my thanks for the services for both the fire service and ambulance service. I think we have a terrific resource here. I think we've not invested as well as we could in our resources, and I'm impressed with the leadership. Please tolerate my pointed questions, because sometimes it helps me clarify where the priorities are. We obviously can't always get 100% of what we want up front the first round. So I think we can do our job better if we understand really what the priorities are, and also look at creative ways we could join together maybe with the private sector in ways that we can accomplish what we need to do and fund it in a timely manner rather than down the road when we have the money.
Mr. Spropoulos. Yeah, you'll have to share the only mic.
The clerk was giving me a hard time earlier because it wasn't picking up on the microphone. Director Gamble and I had talked about getting together before this meeting a couple of times, and he's incredibly busy and I'm incredibly busy, and we kind of went like that. But one of the things I wanted to make sure that everybody keeps in mind as you're talking about service areas and transitioning either the powers to add, you know, fire-based EMS, or when you're talking about equipment, is service areas do not have a separate legal existence. They are part of the borough. How they're run, where things are located, who's in what building, that's up to this body at the end of the day. Just like everything else that belongs to the borough, at the end of the day is up to the body. So when you hear about, like, well, they don't want us in the building, maybe that's the Board of Supervisors, maybe that's the people running that particular fire district, or the staff, or, oh, we need more space. But, or when you're talking about co-locating, you know, a shop to work on the vehicles, ultimately that decision rests with the borough assembly, because the service areas don't have a separate legal existence. They cannot own property. They don't. It's all in the borough's name. You can't sue or be sued by a service area either. It's all in the borough's name. And the Supreme Court just reaffirmed that last week in the case involving the borough, that service areas don't have an independent legal existence. So it is all here.
The questions that come up, though, are when the service area monies they think are jumping out of their service area. That's when my phone rings.
Right. And again, that becomes a decision for the assembly to make. And the accounting of how the money gets spread becomes a question that the court is going to give deference to this body unless it's completely in left field. For example, the road swap that was going to happen a few years ago, whereby the state was going to take over Seward Meridian, and therefore the state was going to stop maintaining some other roads. A lot of people were complaining about that. There may be a political aspect to that. There isn't a legal aspect to that at all. There's no legally actionable claim to say, well, what roads are you maintaining and what roads are you not maintaining? That's a discretionary call for this body to make. So the same kind of principle would apply to fire service areas too. I just want to mention that as everybody starts thinking about how to, you know, move forward with DES and their priorities, because there is some flexibility there to help to start to address some of the problems, issues, priorities, not problems.
Thank you. Any other comments? Well, thank you, gentlemen, for what you do, as well as for the presentation. We'll bite this off one bite at a time. And if there's no further comments, we will adjourn to get something to eat before our regular meeting.